It's very difficult when we read the stories of those who have been made to be captives in a place that they don't want to be, especially of great danger. I remember the horrific situation of the Iranian captivity under President Carter, and I remember how that shook our nation. And we've just gone through in the last several weeks the plight of our fellow Americans who are caught in Afghanistan. And will they or will they not be captives in the days ahead? And these things gain our attention because being forced against your will to be in a place you do not want to be in and being overcome by people that you don't agree with at all, in fact, have a diametrically opposed philosophy or belief system, is a very horrifying situation. Well, the nation of Israel found themselves in a very unique situation. God had allowed it. In fact, what had been a provision turned into a captivity. And that's what we find in the book of Exodus. If you'll turn with me there to chapter 1 here this evening, we're only going to take a few minutes here today to begin our look at this great book. But it's a very important book. I've entitled the series Deliverance, and that certainly is the key heartbeat of this book. It was God's plan to redeem and to develop Israel, and it really is a parallel of how God works in the life of an individual to redeem us and then to develop us and to grow us in our Christian life. And you really see all of that in this one book. You see Satan's endeavor, especially in this chapter, but throughout the book, to stop the plan of God. Satan hates the plan of God, and he certainly has shown his hatred against God with the people of Israel. History has just over and over the stories of the Jewish people in horrible situations. One captivity after another captivity, and all the way to the Holocaust and even to modern issues of our day. And so Satan is a very real foe. As I said, I'm not going to get into it now. Even what happened 20 years ago, there are very clear theological battles that were going on at that time, and ramifications that we need to understand in our own country. So Satan's doing everything he can to stop God from accomplishing his purpose. And in the book of Exodus, the first part basically tells us of God's rescue of the people of Israel from Egypt and bringing them to Mount Sinai. And the second part describes his covenant with them as they encamp there at Mount Sinai. That's the simplest way to divide the book. Others would see three prominent subjects of Exodus, and that would be the plan of deliverance in the first 18 chapters, and then God's guidance for holiness, for morality in chapters 19 to 24, and then God's order for worship in chapters 25 through 40. And so much is packed into this one book. And so I want to look just quickly as an overview of the first chapter here today. We'll come back to that next week and begin to unfold how God began to bring Israel from just being a bunch of captives into an actual functioning theocracy that would have a major role in the world, and more than that, would be the people that would produce the Messiah, our deliverer. First of all, we see the promise of God in verses 1 to 7. And I'm not going to read all of this. We have the names of the children of Israel given to us of the 12 tribes. And verse 5, and all the souls that came out of the loins of Jacob were 70 souls, for Joseph was in Egypt already. And Joseph died, and all his brethren, and all that generation. Now, God had made a covenant with Israel, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, named by God there at the Brook Jabbok, Israel, a prince with God. He had made a covenant with them. Now, if you'll just go back a few pages to Genesis chapter 12, you have the great Abrahamic covenant that the Lord reaffirmed with Abraham on several different occasions. But in Genesis chapter 12, verse 1, "Now the Lord had said unto Abram, get thee out of thy kindred and from thy kindred and from thy father's house and unto a land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee and curse him that curseth thee. And in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed." So that promise actually has wonderful fulfillment even in our lives. Well, the promise was reiterated to Abraham, then to his son Isaac, and then to Jacob, as Jacob received the inheritance from his father. But in Genesis chapter 46, you have, as he hears about the fact that Joseph is on the throne, that Joseph wants them to come and be protected during the famine down in the land of Goshen in Egypt, we read in Genesis 46, verse 2, "And God spake unto Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, Here am I. And he said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation. I will go down with thee into Egypt, and I will also surely bring thee up again, and Joseph shall put his hand upon thine eyes." And so even after all that's transpired there, God's covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob was going to be fulfilled. Now remember, I said Satan knew of this plan and did not want this to be fulfilled. And I'm going to just mention this, but God has made a covenant with all those that will believe. I've already mentioned on the entire world. And Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him for righteousness. And so God made a covenant with Israel. God made a covenant with those that would believe. And the good news is God kept his promise. Think about it, the situation there. If you go and fast forward from the 70 that came into Israel 400 years before, and now, according to what is said in chapter 12, the adult males in Exodus totaled 600,000 people. 600,000 males. I didn't count the women and the children. So a very conservative estimate would have put the total Israelite population at 2 million. Now, in ancient times, that's a big number. Cities didn't get that big. So you've got where the Pharaoh was, and they're up there in the land of Goshen, are 2 million plus people. This is a problem for Egypt. But it also shows you there that when God says he'll do something, he'll do it. And so you see over and over and over God blessing his people, God multiplying them, God providing for them. And just making an application for us, I'll tell you what, when God promises something, he will keep his promise. Our salvation is secure. And everything about the Word of God that applies to us, we can count on. And I like the statement from Robert Murray McShane, that man that knew the Lord so well. "If I could hear Christ praying for me in the next room, I would not fear a million enemies. Yet distance makes no difference. He is praying for me. He ever liveth to make intercession." And as we go through the book of Exodus, I want you to realize it's the very same God. And how God deals with the nation of Israel is how he deals with us individually. And we can see the wonderful power, the miraculous provision, the communication of God, his heart for them to understand, his protection from the enemies around them. You have throughout this book a display of God's working on the behalf of his people. And so we can have great confidence in that. God will fulfill his promises. As you know, the story of Adoniram Judson, how it took a few years before he finally had a convert. And at the end of 3 years, he was asked, what evidence did he have for his ultimate success there? Because it was very difficult. He had to learn the language. The conditions were horrible. Of course, you know, he lost his wife. Many things occurred during that time. But he replied, as much as there is a God who will fulfill his promises. And because he believed that God would fulfill his promises, 100 churches and thousands of converts were saved by the time he went home to be with the Lord. That's a pretty amazing thing. God keeps his word. But there is the great battle, and so the problem of the world comes up here. If you start in verse 7, and the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly and multiplied and waxed exceeding mighty, and the land was filled with them. 2 million people plus. Now there arose up a new king over Egypt, which knew not Joseph. And he said unto his people, behold, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we are. Come on and let us deal wisely with them, lest they multiply. And it come to pass when there falleth out a war, they join also our enemies and fight against us, and so get them up out of the land. Therefore they set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens, and they built for Pharaoh treasure cities, Pithom and Ramesses. So we see very quickly as God begins to bless Israel, even after the favor they had had and the protection they had, Satan riles up the Pharaohs, the most mighty nation or most mighty empire on earth at that time, and Egypt saw Israel as a threat. Ever wondered why Christians are treated like they are? You know, you look at them in countries, they're a minority. They don't have any power. They don't have arms, many of them. They don't have the nation's wealth in many of these places where there's persecution. But I'm telling you, Satan sees them as a threat. And folks, we've got to understand that that's exactly what Satan sees in America. Christianity that has thrived in years past has been a threat to his move to accomplish his purposes. That's why there's a battle. Don't be surprised by all the anti-Christian rhetoric and all the secularism that is being promoted today. This is simply the war that the Bible tells us about. It's no different than back at the time that we're reading here in Exodus chapter 1. And so they wanted to keep their identity, and they wanted to not allow Israel to have any effect on them. So the world is opposed to the fulfillment of God's plan. What was God's plan? That they would multiply, that God was going to bless them, that God was going to have them have an enormous influence over the world, and Satan through the world was bound to stop them. He, as we so often mention from 2 Corinthians 4:4, is the God, he's the God of this world, and he blinds the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is in the image of God, should shine unto them. The world is already in rebellion. Satan can control his kingdom. He still is the God of this world. And so the world system, wanting to fulfill its own desires, will do everything they can to stop the influence of Bible Christianity. You see that here, of course, stopping God's people from being developed. And so what does the world do? Well, it enslaves people to do its own will. And that's what you have here. They made them slaves. They weren't slaves before. You know, I could spend so much time talking about it, but it always amazes me how every next group of teenagers thinks that somehow the world's going to be a blessing to them, not realizing, if they would just have their eyes open, that Satan is just constantly enslaving the next generation to the world's control. And the Bible makes that very clear. We're, of course, to be a living sacrifice, but Romans 12:2, and be not conformed, be not pressed into the mold of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And so we don't see what a taskmaster the world is. Look at the technology, the sensuality, the habits that people are just bound by, think of the indoctrination in our schools and the indoctrination through entertainment and through all kinds of communication through the media. On and on you could go. And you're now sensing, really for one of the first times in our country, the domination of our government to control in ways that we have never seen before. That is the natural way that the world goes. And of course, it enslaves through the pride of life. Christians have given up a life of fruitfulness to have what they need to have to try to be somebody, to meet the need of acceptance. And in 1 John 2:14, you have that great passage about the battle with the wicked one, and then loving not the world. And then in verse 16, for all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And so we're going to see the pressure of the world throughout this book. And then finally, the program of the evil one. It is just amazing what Satan will do. Let me just say, though, I failed to mention verse 12. But the more they afflicted them, the more they what? Multiplied. Isn't that great? They just, listen, when God's on your side, it's amazing what happens. The more they multiplied and grew, and they were grieved because of the children of Israel, and the Egyptians made the children of Israel to serve with vigor, and they made their lives bitter with hard bondage and mortar and in brick and in all manner of service in the field. All their service wherein they made them serve was with rigor. But it didn't work. But then they got to what we've seen over the last several decades. What was his program? Well, let's destroy the next generation. Let's destroy the next generation. And the king of Egypt spake to the Hebrew midwives, of which the name of the one was Shiprah and the other Puah. And he said, when ye do the office of a midwife to the Hebrew women and see them upon the stools, if it be a son, then ye shall kill him. But if it be a daughter, then she shall live. And much could be said here, folks, but that if Satan cannot get through enslavement and through persecution, he will do what he can then to destroy the next generation. And let me say, has Satan done a pretty good job of bringing down over the last generation, the younger generation that are in evangelical churches today? You know, I've given you many stats, but when you look at younger evangelicals, they're not even biblically, doctrinally orthodox at all. And they, in fact, this summer when we had our Dino World, how many evangelical younger adults said, we never knew these things. We're talking about that people profess to be born again. They had no clue that God created literally and that there were dinosaurs on the earth at the same time there were people. Basic things. And so Satan has been a master in our culture of destroying, without having to do what Pharaoh did here, but destroying through many other means the next generation. And has he not been able to do that through good, strong, conservative Christians that want to do right but did not really follow through in their homes? Weak in the matter of discipline, weak in the matter of training their children as they ought and taking the stand that they ought to, and we've lost a major generation right there. And so this is the constant program. You can just see it with God keeps his promises, but Satan is doing everything he can through the world to enslave us and then to destroy the next generation. You can see that one era after another era after another era throughout the history of mankind, Israel, and then the church. And we'll pick up on this. But again, thank God for his working. There were some midwives that wouldn't obey Pharaoh, and they obeyed God. And God gave them courage. And so Pharaoh was thwarted for a while. He thought that would take care of it, and then it did not. And God continued to work. And then there were some godly parents who had a boy named Moses, the one who would be used of God to deliver the people from the world. It's an amazing thing. God's in the business of deliverance. But make no mistake about it. Satan is doing everything he can to imprison us. He's doing everything he can to destroy the next generation. But we have the great and mighty promises of God. God will bless if we will obey him. And in this book, I trust that we'll take to heart some of the key lessons on faith and believing God and realizing God's power and to look to him and to be encouraged that when God is on our side, there's nothing that can stop the work of God from going forward. Let's bow for prayer.